You're with Stateside. I'm April Baer. Traveling around Michigan, you might have noticed small, century-old buildings with the word Grange at the top. In rural areas, these buildings sometimes seem like they're in the middle of nowhere. And in urban places, like, for example, Ann Arbor, a Grange building can be surrounded by a sea of strip malls and subdivisions, but it's still there, an aging relic from a bygone era. Now, if you do live in Michigan's farm country, you probably know what I'm talking about. And if not, the question that pops up might be, what's a Grange? With us today to talk more about the Grange in agriculture, equality, and other sectors of Michigan life is Jillian Reese of the Michigan History Center. Jillian, welcome back to Stateside.
Glad to be back.
So for the agriculturally challenged among us, what is a Grange?
The Grange is a fraternal organization for both men and women, and it's very similar to groups like the Freemasons, the Odd Fellows, even Rotary International. But the Grange focused specifically on farming and rural life in the United States. Its big sort of focus and mission was on community building in rural areas, and then turned into more of a advocacy group for farmers. They would advocate for specific public policy and also as a way to educate farmers on new and best practices in agriculture. The Grange has a very specific structure. There is the National Grange, which is, you know, the organization that lobbies Congress and interacts with the Department of Agriculture on a federal level. There are state granges. Ours is called the Michigan State Grange, which interacts with the government on a statewide level, but also runs statewide education programs and outreach programs. There's the Panoma Granges, which are at the county level. And then there are subordinate granges, which are the local granges. And these are really the center of the rural life communities. You know, those buildings that you were talking about would have been the meeting houses for these local granges.
When did the Grange get going, both nationally and here in Michigan?
The National Grange was organized in 1867 in Washington, D.C., in the years after the American Civil War. And there had been a movement in the Northeast to sort of have clubs that would focus on rural needs. And these were called granges. And then also a push from the federal government to sort of research agriculture in the South in a post-slavery world. And the movement really caught on quite quickly from there. The first Grange in Michigan was Burnside Grange Number 1. That was actually in Lapeer County, and they were formed in 1872. And then the Michigan State Grange as a statewide organization of about a member, about 20 different granges across the state, was founded in Kalamazoo in 1873. And by 1876, there were hundreds of granges throughout Michigan and tens of thousands of members. So it was very popular and grew very, very quickly in the 1870s.
Jillian, what do we know about rural farm life at that time in Michigan? What would some of the challenges have been that farming families would have been up against and the issues that would have been really pressing for them?
Yeah, I mean, when we think about rural farm life during this time, you know, it was a much larger part of Michigan's population and economy. You know, majority of people in Michigan would have been working in the agricultural market. And there were other industries that would impact rural life. Mining and lumbering were one of them. But even then, there was usually in mining towns and lumber camps, there was a little bit more densely populated area to support the camp's needs. Whereas, you know, farming life, you need large stretches of land of people who were connected on a market level, but maybe had a little bit less populated on the community level in terms of density. It was a time period after the American Civil War where agriculture was seeing this push to be more focused on scientific agriculture. And developing scientific agriculture was a huge driver in the displacement of Native communities in Michigan after the American Civil War, and sort of involvement in the scientific or professional agriculture system would become a signifier to whether or not Native Americans living in Michigan were considered to be quote-unquote civilized, which had impacts on their citizenship and their voting rights. If they were involved in agriculture, that was an easy way to prove that they had become part of Michigan's community in the eyes of the law. And when we sometimes think about farming, we don't tend to think about that sort of scientific side of it. There was an industrial revolution happening in manufacturing, but that was happening on the farm too. You're seeing a huge influx of mechanization on farms. The ag school here in East Lansing was started in 1855 as a way to sort of professionalize the field and to elevate farming and to say to people that farming was an as important field of study as philosophy or medicine, something that you should go to a four-year college to learn about. And the Agricultural College of the State of Michigan was the first of its kind in the country. So Michigan was on the forefront of this sort of industrial revolution within farming.
So with that in mind, that there was this concept of modernization and science that was driving a lot of what was happening, what was the Grange doing for Michigan settler farming families? I mean, was the idea to try to get people who were farming in this new way to sort of think about and learn about some of the new practices? Or what exactly happened at Grange meetings?
So first and foremost, it was a place to socialize and to build community. A majority of the things that people did at Grange meetings was very similar to any fraternal organization. You know, you were there to meet people, to make friends, to make connections. Today we call this networking, but they would have done social leisure activities, putting on plays, pageants that were focused on farming, but they would also, you know, be interested in other issues and topics for sure. But I think the long-lasting sort of national and statewide legacy of the Grange was this increase in political power of rural farming communities at a time where they're starting to see a depopulation from rural areas of the state into more urban areas. And in the 1870s and the 1880s, when the Grange was being established in Michigan, that depopulation had already started, but especially after the kickoff of the automotive industry and the mass industrialization around that in urban areas, there was even more of a movement of people from rural to urban places. So it honestly offered rural communities that visibility on a statewide level and to lobby collectively for policies that were seen by the Grange as quote unquote sort of rural America policies, things that would improve the lives of rural Americans. So it was the education, it was networking, but then it was also sort of this public policy think tank from the community level up.
If you're just tuning in, I'm talking with the Michigan History Center's Jillian Reese about the history and legacy of the Grange. This agriculture advocacy group is in part responsible for a lot of things we take for granted today, like flat rate shipping at the post office and securing women the right to vote. Jillian, 21st century Michigan tends to think of rural areas as being quite conservative. But from what you're saying, it kind of sounds like the Grange in its early days at least saw itself as fairly progressive, notwithstanding who it was advocating for and some of the folks who were getting displaced by farming at that point.
Yeah, you know, we always need to remember that these terms, conservative, liberal, progressive, they're changing depending on the context and the time period that we're in. In terms of the late 1800s and sort of what the Grange was advocating for, in some ways, we would certainly see these as progressive, but there were other things that they believed in and they were pushing for that would be considered to be conservative today. So one of the things that the Grange was really known for was checking the power of big railroad monopolies. They argued successfully that interstate commerce, specifically with railroads at the time, should be seen as a public utility in which the federal government and the state government needed to intercede to make sure that the owners of these railroads weren't exploiting, particularly farmers, with their price for transportation. But that groundwork of understanding interstate commerce as a public utility would later be used as a way to fight discrimination on the basis of public accommodation. So the most, I think, famous of this is based on racial discrimination. And so there are similar sorts of arguments around what the Grange was trying to do with railroad monopolies, as you would see with people trying to fight Jim Crow laws in the South. They were also an organization that lobbied for free delivery for post in rural communities and the expansion of the U.S. Postal Service to rural communities so that farmers didn't have to travel so far to get their mail. This led to improvements on rural roads because if a postal worker is traveling on these roads, they need to be at least passable. And then also a federal involvement in the parcel post system. So those flat rate boxes that you use at USPS is a direct result of the lobbying of the Grange. They supported a progressive federal income tax that they thought would encourage family-sized farms as opposed to a more corporate farming model. They were interested in farming cooperatives. So, you know, the idea of a member-owned commerce. But then, you know, they were also very involved in the temperance movement and thought that the sale of alcohol and to some extent tobacco should be regulated by the state and federal government.
You sent over some interesting information about how the Grange got involved in the suffrage movement.
Yes.
Was temperance the doorway that got the Grange involved in women getting the right to vote?
I think it was a couple different things. From the start, the Grange was an organization that supported membership for men and women on an equal basis, which even today, there are many fraternal organizations that are gender specific. So they, by making men and women have equal membership and allowing women to have leadership positions from the start, they equated women's issues with farming issues. So when women had a lack of political power, when women couldn't vote, that would end up hurting some of the public policy initiatives that the Grange was pushing forward. So on the one hand, there was sort of a altruistic background to this where, you know, the farm and men and women on the farm were seen as sort of in partnership with one another, that both of their work was necessary for the farm to be successful. But at the same time, they understood that they had a large number of folks that couldn't vote, that if they got the right to vote, would vote for things like temperance, things like a progressive income tax. So, you know, there was a practical reason why they wanted to support women's suffrage. And it went beyond just individual policy issues.
Right. Jillian, I wonder, do you know much about what was behind the initial decision to allow women to have leadership positions in the Grange?
It was really, you know, I think it was sort of the basis of these values in sort of what they saw as the most efficient way to run a farm. That the farm was based on the family, that a family needed, you know, at the time, a family needed husband and a wife. And we have a broadside in our collection that I think really kind of hones, gets this message across. It's a suffrage, a women's suffrage broadside in support of a suffrage amendment in 1912. And it says, the farmer knows. The farm that is run without a woman's help isn't much of a farm. A government that is run without a woman's help is a one-sided government. So I think that if you see women's roles on the farm as important as a man's roles on the farm, it's only natural to the Grange then to allow women to have leadership positions and to run granges. And then all of a sudden, if you have women in these leadership positions, their issues become synonymous with the organization issues, which is why the Michigan State Grange is the first statewide organization in the state to support women's suffrage. And that's even before the Michigan State Federation of Women's Clubs, which is a group that only allows women as members. So, you know, by having this sort of mixing of the genders, there is more of an appreciation for some of the ways that women are discriminated against in the United States.
Are there ways the Grange is still active today?
Yeah, so the Grange is still a national organization that advocates for the needs of farms and rural Americans. Things like the 4-H Club, which I think is an organization that's in a lot of rural high schools, is a arm of the Grange. Today, the Grange has about 150,000 members. So there's still a large community of Grangers. There's about 1,700 local Granges across the United States. And they do exactly the thing that they were doing in the late 19th century, which is offering rural Americans a space to not only gather and to build their own communities, but then also to advocate for those for their needs on a state and national level.
Jillian Reese of the Michigan History Center. Jillian, thank you so much for getting us up to speed on what the Grange did and what it's still doing today.
Thanks.